I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. This is Wednesday, June 15, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the victims and their families in that tragic shooting in Orlando, Florida? Thank you. Please remain standing and all of you in our pledge time. Hands over your heart, ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a roll call.
Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Amy. At this point, the board will review the order of the agenda and see if we want to make any changes with the agenda as presented by staff. Do any members of the board want to change the order of the agenda? Someone will make a motion on that.
I move that we accept the agenda.
Second.
There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to our public comments. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to make comments to the board. Please bear in mind that any comments that are made should be on items not on the agenda, and we cannot take any action. Is there anyone that would like to come forward during public comment?
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I am here again asking for your administrator's resume. I provided some case law that supports my request. I actually have a little excerpt from a question and answer section of the First Amendment Coalition website, and I just wanted to read. Under the PRA, Public Record Act, government agencies need not disclose personnel, medical, or similar files, the disclosure of which would constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Government Code Section 6254C. With respect to government employees' resumes, in 1982, the Court of Appeal upheld an order that an agency disclose such portions of a particular employee's personnel file as are necessary to disclose his professional qualifications or to provide the equivalent information in a resume. And I can't pronounce the case name, Eskaton, Monterey Hospital versus Myers. The court rejected the argument that disclosing this information would be an unwarranted invasion of the employee's privacy, saying that the information as to the education, training, experience, awards, previous positions, and publications of the employee is routinely presented in professional and social settings, is relatively innocuous, and implicates no applicable privacy or public policy exemption. I don't want any personal information. I never asked for personal information. I simply want the document that was given to you in which you made your choice for this particular candidate in the selection process for a district administrator. And I don't know why I'm hitting a roadblock. I don't know why. And I heard Director Hill ask that it be made available. And I still don't have it. And that's why I feel like I am a broken record. The public is entitled to that document. And as we go through and watch the performance of this individual, We don't know what to expect because we don't know what his qualifications are. What did he tell you he was good at? What are your expectations of him other than the job description that was advertised? We know Mr. Huebner is a geologist. It seems to me that when any kind of work going on with geology on the site, he could alleviate some of the cost associated with that as a project manager or as some relying on his history and his own experience. He should be able to save district money. That was why you went to a full-time general manager. You were looking for someone who could take away the cost of outsourcing so much of the work. And I'm not seeing that yet.
Anyone else?
Good evening. Beatrice Spencer, Royal Grande. One thing really off topic. Considering the events in Orlando, I wanted to make a pitch for any and all eligible blood donors. It's almost summertime. I routinely get calls during summer. It's peak use, low donation time, and it's something that very few people who are actually eligible to do. And so if there's anyone out there who's listening, it's not that bad. it's a great thing to do. So, at the last meeting, had the opportunity to sit behind Mr. Greg Davison, who was here from NBS. And before I came to the meeting, I was scanning through some of this information that was supplied to him from, he said to me, from Oceano. For billing, and there was one thing on this page, which is 7 of 23, that really stuck out at me because I have an office at 124 South Halcyon. There is listed here a $3,120.60 outstanding invoice for 137 South Halcyon. Now, I know that to be in the same block, yet across the street from where I work, and I don't believe that could be an Oceano property. And so then I asked him, I said, you know, where did this information come from? He said Oceano. But there are several, if you go through the number of pages, there are several of them where the assessor's parcel number is not listed. It's just designated with a 1. And those meant that anything that was on there, the APN for this account was still being researched. And so I just had a question first of all, I think it's a good thing now that the county, that this is being looked into, but it brings the question forward, what kind of issues is Aurora Grande having? What kind of issues is Grover Beach having with their billing? I can't imagine that it's just Oceano, who's doesn't have 100% accurate billing. And if that's funds due to the district, it might be worthy of somebody doing some research to just see what kind of things got kicked out. Director Lucy mentioned several times, and I forget the number of invoices that hadn't reached their respective owners or tenants, but I bet there's probably some in the other two cities as well, and so maybe we need some sort of accounting just to make sure that any and all parcels that receive services from the district are actually being billed accurately. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spencer. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public comments. And let me start by saying, Ms. Spencer, thank you so much about the call for the blood donors. I think thank you for delivering that message. I think it is timely. And so hopefully folks will heed that advice and go and donate blood. With respect to the information regarding the billing, Gerhard, I know that we are entering into a phase. Let me ask him a question and then you want to add on. Okay. So I know that the agreements with the two cities who are the member agencies, there's going to be some discussion about renewing those contracts. Is there maybe an opportunity to have someone look into the billing to make sure it's accurate. I'm not quite sure if the board is okay with doing that, if there's a majority.
Okay.
Is there a majority for that?
It certainly can be part of that discussion.
Okay. And Mary, you have something?
Yeah. I also, too, want to thank Ms. Spencer for bringing up the issue of blood donors. It's vital. The Oceano Community Services District provides water to several properties outside of the sphere of influence, particularly down Elm Street, down Housian Street. So there are a lot of properties that are not in the Oceano sphere of influence but are in Arroyo Grande and get their water from Oceano.
Okay. Jim, do you have anything?
Nothing really else at this time, but I do also appreciate the timely reminder for blood donations.
Okay, very good. Okay. So let's move on to the next item. Jared, you have the floor.
Next item is the consent agenda.
I'm sorry. So let's see. Yeah, we are moving on to the consent agenda. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent?
No.
Okay. Let's see if there. So we'll proceed with the consent agenda as presented. Is there any member of the community that would like to comment on any of the consent items?
On the warrants, I see. I don't know what page I pulled this from. It was for Royal Wholesale Electric, late fee of $57.92. Not a lot of money, but I don't think we should be paying late fees. I think that we should be able to pay our bills on time. As a ratepayer, I pay my bills on time. I expect the sanitation to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Julie Tacker again, and I wanted to speak to the warrants. In particular, I wanted to speak to the Nunley warrant and the portion that is for the redundancy project. This goes back to kind of what I was talking about earlier with regard to Mr. Huebner being on board and being a full-time administrator. How much could he take off of Nunley so that Nunley wasn't able to bill this much? It seems to me that that's what your goal was when you hired a full-time administrator, was that some of the project management would be alleviated by having that full-time manager. And in particular, I'm curious about the redundancy project, because Kennedy Jenks is on board and they are proceeding with phase one, and it just, it again comes back to that, what is Mr. Huebner's expertise, and when can we see those outsourced bills go down? Thanks
Julie. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, is there any additional board discussion, or someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I move that we accept the consent agenda items as presented by the staff.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None. Motion carries. Let's move on to our action items tonight, and this is item 6A. This is the fiscal year 2016-17 budget. Mr. Huebner, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, board members, members of the audience, Gerhard Huebner. I'll be introducing this item, very short presentation. Thank you, Amy. Let's just get started. If I can advance that first one, or I can't. Amy, will you do that for me, please? So a little background, of course, as usual. At your June 1st meeting, the board was provided with a comprehensive narrative summary of the proposed draft fiscal year 2016-17 budget and blueprint for funding the district's operations, projects, initiatives, as well as dealing with some of the legacy issues. Directed staff to return to this meeting June 15th with the final budget for fiscal year. That's provided for you as attachment number 2 for consideration and adoption. So revisions that you'll see since that June 1st item, per the board's direction, we revised one of the line items. That was number 1977. That was for the outside counsel litigation. That went from $40,000 to $20,000. All other values remain the same in the budget. The reserve policy is being considered as a separate item today's agenda. We did provide public notice that was published in the San Luis Obispo Tribune. And that notice is also provided, you see, as one of the attachments. Resolution 348, it provides documentation that your board considered and adopted a budget for this fiscal year. It's nothing more than that. Resolution 2016-349 incorporates the salary schedule, position classifications, and salary steps within the respective ranges for the fiscal year. It also includes the 1.5 cost of living increase that was approved by your board earlier this year in January and is reflected in that salary range table. We also have Exhibit A, which is attached to the resolution, which describes the district's benefit package provided to employees. There are some minor revisions. There's really no substantive changes. We did some formatting just for clarification purposes. So that's included. That has traditionally been included as part of the budget package. I discovered that it was not included last year, so I wanted to correct that, and that's why you see it in this budget proposal. You have a number of attachments. The consolidated budget spreadsheet, which has the overall numbers combined, the various Fund 19 with its attachments, Fund 20, 26, and the two resolutions with the exhibits. So it's quite a comprehensive package. I believe it has everything that you need to consider for tonight. And of course, the public notice. So with that, after conducting a public meeting and considering any feedback, staff does recommend adoption of this fiscal year 2016-17 budget with the accompanying resolutions. May I be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Gerhard. Any questions of staff? Mary, you have any questions?
No, I just want to compliment you on how comprehensive it was, easy to read, and easy to find the information on the line items, so thank you.
Okay. Jim?
I don't have any additional questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Karen.
There was just one thing. You'd only budgeted $10,000 for the audit, for your annual audit, and so I was anticipating it to be a little bit higher.
It could be. We have an RFP out. In fact, we've been fielding questions from various auditors. Again, sort of budgeting is an art, trying to anticipate what the cost has been in the past. It may come lower. It may come higher. We'll just have to see when the proposals come in.
Okay, great. Thank you.
One comment, if I might, with respect to the budget or question or comment. Oftentimes, audits have a particular point of focus, and one thing that we might focus on this time is the interface between the district and the member agencies with respect to fee collections and so forth. I don't know that that's been looked into from either end in any of the member agencies or from the sanitation district in recent memory, and it might be timely to invite the auditor to look at that, and okay, if they want to find a particular focus area for the audit.
And can I just
let's hold that comment until after we got to the public. We'll come back and give some direction.
And if I could just expand on that just a little bit, I know that the accounts have not been audited for, well, never probably. So that you might want to consider that.
Okay.
Very good. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the item before the board tonight?
couple of things stood out to me. Attorney fees under Fund 19. Last time when we looked at the proposal, I noted that it had $40,000. I see here it's up to $96,000. So that's saying that legal fees can cost us $8,000 a month. I thought we were going to try to get those fees lower.
I'm sorry. There you go. Okay, I was just going to make sure we were on the same page with you. Go ahead, Patty.
The other thing I noticed in this budget was one day sick leave per month. I worked in private sector, but 12 months a year for sick leave, just we seem to give a whole lot, you know, the benefit package, 100% health and stuff. And then I see the computer purchase that, you know, the employees do have to pay us back, but we'll give them $1,500. When did the sanitation district get into the funding for computers for employees? That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
Debbie Peterson, City of Grover Beach, and I'm hoping that you can clarify the comment that we've had no audits, because my understanding is we have one every year, so I'd like the board to clarify that comment so that the public's not confused about that. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the budget. There was I won't say it was a promise given to the public, but it was a reason given for when the public protested a great deal about having a full-time, very expensive administrator. The reason given was, well, that's okay because we're going to save some money on engineering costs down the road because we're hiring someone who can oversee projects. Now, this isn't a specific criticism of the administrator as such. It's just a question to the board. If that was your direction, have you made that clear to him, number one? And number two, I'm also a little bit concerned if the new administrator is, as the board had anticipated, going to be overseeing a lot of these projects and reducing our engineering costs, then how do you do that when you are putting in the budget room for an office somewhere outside of the district? So I'm a little bit alarmed because I'm not seeing the board's direction reflected in the budget. What I'm seeing in the budget is that engineering costs are not being reduced, and that, in fact, overhead costs are being increased by taking that administrator off-site.
Anyone else?
I agree with Debbie. I don't like the idea of an off-site office, and I think you need to have a very healthy conversation about that before any money is spent on pursuing that. You might put it in your budget, but don't spend it until you get a comprehensive review of the current situation. That strategic planning that I mentioned 2 weeks ago, the $35,000 budget item, and Mr. Huebner gave you all an explanation about expertise and what a facilitator could do. I went to Mr. Huebner's contract, and in the mutual commitments section, strategic workshops. One, as soon as practicable after the employee's start date, the district board of directors and the employee will meet to review the district's existing strategic plan and or set out goals and priorities for the employee to implement prior to the employee's annual performance evaluation or such other dates as determined in the course of the meeting. Two, thereafter, the review and update of the District Board of Directors' strategic plan will occur following each election of the board between January 1st and March 31st. For purposes of clarity, the District Board of Directors and the employee shall further establish a relative priority among those strategic goals and objectives within the strategic plan. This is his job. It is his job to perform the strategic plan, to get the goals from his board. And $35,000, whether you spend all of it or 20 of it, is a lot of money. And now I really am a broken record. You hired a full-time manager to alleviate costs for this district, and again, I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing an added cost. We didn't have $35,000 in the budget for strategic planning in the past. And Mr. Huebner is paid $150,000. He gets a $350 a month car allowance. It is his job. These are the things that I heard you expect from an administrator when you set out to get a full-time administrator. So I think you take that strategic plan number out. Make him work for his money.
Is there anyone else?
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I wanted to say that I agree with the previous two speakers. I don't understand why we need a satellite office. I think we should try to keep our costs down and work with what we have.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward and bring it back to the board and this board discussion. Mary, you have anything?
Like to hear from other board members first before I put my comments in.
Okay. Jim?
With regard to the off-site office, I am concerned about that. I don't really support the concept of an off-site office in that there was some discussion among members of the public that hiring the district administrator would reduce engineering costs, and that was not... I don't believe we hired the administrator specifically for engineering skills and abilities, nor do I expect the district administrator to perform engineering functions. But rather, what I think we expected was some skill with project oversight and to some degree project management, but project oversight certainly. And some of that oversight, most of that oversight, I would say, needs to be performed at the district site. So I'm not probably tending to be too supportive of off-site offices at this time. However, some of the proposed funding for that might be used to improve the current office situation, including possibly enlargement. Goals and strategic planning, I tend to believe that that can be performed on with a level of effort of district staff. With the administrator, probably the plant superintendent and the board working together. So I think strategic plans can be done mostly in-house with the existing expertise. And there was a comment made about hiring the administrator to alleviate cost. And I don't think that that was... a particular goal per se, but in my opinion, there was considerable cost that the district has endured for a number of years having part-time administrators. And I believe that, I firmly believe, and I still do to this day, that having a full-time administrator will facilitate the district's goals and objectives and do that in a more cost-effective manner than the previous policy of having part-time administrators, especially with the number of projects that the district is finding itself engaged with today. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jim. And I would say I agree with your last comment regarding district administrator and the discussion that went into that, because there are a lot of projects and a lot of different things that Mr. Huberman will bring value to, so I agree with that. I do want to maybe take a step back with respect to Mrs. Wells's comment regarding the attorney's fees. The $96,000 was actually the fee for, I believe, Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton.
That's correct.
So that's not for any outside legal counsel or whatnot.
That's correct.
And then I know that when we had that discussion before, the $40,000 was for anticipated litigation over and above what our current legal team is providing. Is that the correct understanding?
Yes, for any outside or special counsel that the board approved.
And that's what the board gave direction to reduce that from 40 to 20.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Let me just say, regarding the strategic plan, someone who's got experience, and I've seen this not only in my city but on other boards, I believe that if not this year down the road, that is certainly something, once we establish a baseline, that can be done at the staff level. I will say there's value to having a strategic session with an outside facilitator, because Mr. Huebner, and just like the rest of us, come with a certain bias, and I think there's some value. I think at the last meeting I said I wasn't quite sure that $35,000 was the right amount, but that we should think about lowering that amount and doing this initial strategic session, because it's really going to be an opportunity for us to set a direction for this district with community involvement. And quite honestly, I don't know if he could be biased or objective enough to help walk us all through that. So I'm okay with leaving the strategic planning in here, but reducing that number. And whether that's reducing it from 35 to 25,000, I think that's something we should think about, lowering that number. With respect to the remote office, I think Ms. Tacker makes a really good point. I think there is some value in at least keeping the options open. Having gone out to the site numerous times, I know there are some ongoing items that need to be addressed. But this also gets to be about the public's access to Mr. Huebner and other staff. And if there is an opportunity, we should look at it. We want to make sure that we do the cost-benefit analysis and identify what's the best option. And then I think finally, I know that some folks have made the comment about him being out there managing the place, but I think folks in the community have accurately pointed out Mr. Clemens and his value that he brings. And John actually would be out at the current location and managing staff on some day-to-day operations. So I think there's some things we just need to talk through and figure out how best to go forward. But I believe that we should, if we budget it, we do have a complete discussion and go forward from there. So those are my comments at this point. So, Mary, you have anything?
Thank you, John. Thank you, Jim. I don't know how fast you expect somebody to dance. I mean, really, we hired an administrator. We have a $20 million plan that's going forward. Somebody has to know what they're doing. And we still have 3.5 million gallons of water going out into the ocean every single day. So as much as we don't want to deal with reclamation, we're going to deal with reclamation. And WSC is reworking that scope as we speak. So what you expect of one individual is beyond me. You know, one person. To do all this work. Strategic planning, I think it's irresponsible if we don't do strategic planning. And I most definitely agree with an outside facilitator. I've done it 30, 40 different ways. But if we have reclamation and we have redundancy going on and we're not going to strategically plan it, how well are we going to spend the taxpayers' dollars? You know, we can work with the numbers, but to not do it professionally and correctly would be irresponsible. As far as moving off-site, I think that the one thing that hasn't been mentioned is we mentioned the public having access to the administrative staff, not the field, people who work in the field. Of course, Mr. Huebner would be running back and forth between the two. But also, too, is that because of management's choices and personal choices, we're at risk for litigation to not have your administrative staff separated from management. You know, and so I think that it would be irresponsible of us not to move admin because of relationships that have developed. You know, so nobody wants to say it, and I'm trying to say it very politely, along with working the personnel manual and stuff like that. So it will alleviate that pressure right there. I'm very much in favor of moving the administrative staff off-site. I think it'll help everybody in accomplishing their job better and more efficient. And I think that I already got the answer for the legal, so that's all I have to say.
Okay, so does someone want to form a motion?
Let me just clarify one thing that may have been misunderstood. I'm absolutely not adverse to strategic planning. I think strategic planning is fundamental and essential. But my concern was perhaps an inordinately high amount was being budgeted for facilitation, and I think the skill of the of our own employees could be engaged well on that project with, you know, perhaps a reduced amount for facilitation.
Any thought on an amount on that, Jim?
Maybe 10,000, something like that.
Any thought, Mary, on an amount?
Yeah, I was thinking between 20 and 25. I don't think, with these scopes of works, I don't see one facilitator. Okay. I don't see a four-hour workshop. I see a multi-day, multiple facilitators.
Okay, so what if we budget it 20,000, and with the direction that we try and keep that as low as possible. I mean, because it is a budget that can be adjusted, because I think there is a value in strategic planning.
No one would disagree with that.
Okay. All right, someone want to try a motion on this budget?
Let's see. I would move that the Board of Directors of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District approve the budget for fiscal year 2016-17 as presented, with the following changes: that the amount budgeted for goals and strategic planning be reduced to $20,000. And I believe we've already indicated that outside counsel would be at $20,000. And that we so modify and approve resolutions 2016-348 and 2016-349.
Okay. There's a motion. Is there a second on that?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Okay. If there's no additional discussion, let's do roll call.
Yes.
Chairman Sol?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huber and Amy and all the staff.
Okay. So let's move on to item 6B. This is a dedicated reserve fund. Mr. Huber, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, directors, members of the audience, Gerhard Huebner for the record. Can we bring the presentation up, please? Well, I'll just get started. At your June 1st meeting, district staff reintroduced the concept of a dedicated reserve account, as you recall, and this is an excerpt out of the staff report. At least what we discerned at the time was that there was no current dedicated reserve fund established for the district, and that the board may wish to consider creating such a fund, and because several special districts and others have them, and if so, if you're interested, we could come back to you at a future meeting. So I also want to mention that there was a member of the public, was here, I believe, has left, but brought forth information that there's an existing resolution, Resolution 53, that directed money funds towards a reserve fund for the district, and at the conclusion, the board directed us to come back through our budgetary item and discuss potentially a reserve fund, and we're doing so forth today. So, looking at this Resolution 53, and that's included in part of your agenda packet, that's attachment number one. It contains that 20% of the annual charges provided under Section 2, and Section 2 generally describes wastewater fees. So you could put in a reserve fund, or we should have been putting in a reserve fund 20% of our wastewater charges. Or 10% of the annual cost of the maintenance and operation for said district, whatever is less, should be deposited in the reserve fund. So, moving on, further review, when I looked at it, when staff looked at it, legal looked at it, it was unclear to us if the deposit of funds is an annual event. When is it supposed to occur? When the deposit is supposed to be made? Potential uses of the reserve and access to the reserve fund. How could you utilize it? And then there's no overall cap or goal for the amount to be contained in the reserve fund. So these are the kind of things, sort of the details. You collect the money, but what do you do with it? How do you access it? So those are the things that were pointed out in this resolution. And I don't know when the last time this resolution was even considered, reviewed, evaluated. Part of the problem is the state of our records. Let's just be frank with it. It's difficult to find things, and so in any event, at least this is the current state of knowledge that we were able to obtain. So to bring an item before you today for consideration, we drafted up proposed resolution number 352. And these are, I'll call, straw man proposals.
Okay.
These are our attempt to address some of the things that you saw. These are not something that you have the opportunity tonight to change these. Give us some direction. Come back. And you'll see in the conclusion, or you can adopt what we proposed, modifications to that, or alternatively keep what's on the books. So one thing is having this annual contribution to the reserve fund occur July 31st of each year. You close the fiscal books from the past year. You know what your fund balance is. You move the money over, and see, this seems like a reasonable time frame for that to occur. Second proposal is to use the reserve fund only in cases of emergency, natural disaster, unexpected events. So make it extraordinary. Don't make it for routine events, things of that sort. That's the idea with the second bullet. The third one is make it a unanimous vote of the board. Typically, again, I'm coming with my county experience, it would typically be a 4/5 vote. Obviously, we have a small board here. Majority is 2, so unanimous seemed like a logical outcome. And then this is sort of the goal, looking at something about 50% in terms of your total operating expenditures. You don't necessarily have to do that all at once. You could put aside a portion of it this year. I think we mentioned in the staff report $800,000 is roughly what you would do anyway if you were implementing Resolution 53. But you could have a goal of $1.5 million. That would be roughly about half, a little less than half, of your operating expenses, you know, the staff costs, basically keep the lights running, do some repair work, but you wouldn't be doing any capital improvement. So
That's sort of the concept with that particular goal. So just last slide. We're interested in hearing feedback on the updated resolution or the resolution that we've done. The first four items, as I mentioned, is a straw man proposal subject to your revision and feedback. It can be modified today as appropriate based on that feedback. Alternately, the district staff can proceed and just implement Resolution 53 as implemented or as written. With that, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you for that report. Let's see if there's any questions. Anyone have any questions?
What would be, say we had an unexpected expense, right? Would that fund be used for that unexpected expense if it had a unanimous vote? So if we set the priorities for that fund and something happens, can it be changed in, say, mid-year? And then my second question would be, what if there's not enough money to do, what did you say, a 50% transfer? Was that what the recommendation was, or was it 20%?
That was ultimately the goal.
Oh, okay.
Associated with perhaps the overall goal, how much money you want to put into the overall account.
So would that be, so that would be more of a flexible plan?
It's saying that you're going to put, you're going to set the goal of $1.5 million, if you just take this scenario.
Right.
And you could put in half a million this year and do it over a successive years and ultimately get to your targeted reserve. So that would be one way to do it.
Okay.
And the other question is, if you had an unexpected, there's a couple ways you could take care of an unexpected expense. If it's not extraordinary, we still have money likely in contingency. You just adopted a budget with $100,000 contingency. That's the beauty of contingency accounts. You have that ability to draw from it for those kind of events. Or you take it out of fund balance. Or if you made a decision unanimously that it's extraordinary, you would then have access to that reserve fund.
Okay. So it's possible to do the deductions on a quarterly basis as well. It's not...
Sure. You mean putting the money...
Yeah.
We had just said one time a year after you've done your budget area exercise, you do your end-of-the-year reconciliation, then you're going to know how much money you have in your fund balance to basically do your transfer.
Okay. Thank you.
Jim, any questions?
I don't believe I have really any questions.
Okay. Great, thank you. Is there any member of the community that would like to comment on an item before the board tonight? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let's bring it back to the board. Jim, you have any comments?
I do think it's advisable to establish a reserve fund within Fund 19, and I support the concept. One thing that we may wish to discusses the timeliness of how this is established. We have a contingency, perhaps rolling whatever remainder of the contingency into the reserve fund would be one way to go about it. I note that the district has many large expenditures relatively coming forward this year, so I don't believe it's possible to put in, you know, $1.5 million and just declare that to be a reserve fund. So I don't think that's within the district's ability to handle. But I do think that's a good target. Hopefully, we would be able to get there over a period of time. Emergency. Natural disaster or unexpected event pretty well covers it. We have had some of all of that. So I think the board recognizes that. A unanimous vote is difficult, but I think that the board can recognize emergencies, natural disasters, or serious unexpected events. That would be one thing that I think should be vetted here, whether we want to go with a unanimous vote or a two-thirds vote.
Okay. Mary, any thoughts, any comments? Okay. So I agree, Jim. I think we do need to, it sounds like we already have a reserve policy. It hasn't been implemented. There's some things that need to be clarified. So I think maybe the first thing we should discuss is we talk about a reserve fund that states in the amount of 20% of annual charges or 10% of annual cost of district maintenance and operation, whichever is less, which always kind of throws me for a loop when we say whichever is less. So maybe the question to the board is, are we okay with that number that's set, or do we want to look at something different than that? And Garrett, do you know what are those numbers look like if we were to do 20% of annual charges?
So if you look on page 2 of the staff report, mm-hmm. I've done that calculation roughly. It's if you take the first amount, it would be $841,800 or 10% of maintenance. It looks like I did not put in, but that would be less. I can tell you that's a I had my little sticky note, I'm sorry, but it was significantly less, about half of that amount if you do operation and maintenance costs. So,
okay.
It was a lesser number.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that the community was aware of that number and anyone who may be watching was aware of what the current policy calls for. So I think we've got those numbers.
Yes, we do. Okay. And the lower number, the 10% would be the driver because it's an or.
Right.
If you implement that.
So we would then budget that amount. We would put that into the account, and unless you're given further direction by this board, that's the number we would start with, correct?
You could do it that, or right, you could just set an amount that you wanted each year okay. until you reach your goal or your target. Okay. That would be one way to do it.
So that's something that maybe we should figure out how we want to, if we're okay with the resolution 53, which sets that formula.
Realize that this resolution, if you go with this resolution, that would supersede the previous one.
Understood.
So you would be essentially setting new policy, new reserve.
So you're saying this resolution doesn't necessarily bring that forward, or would we need to reaffirm? Okay. So then we need to set an amount. Is that, do I understand?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
One other just discussion of philosophy on maintaining a reserve account. We're in an unusual financial situation where interest rates have been lower than historically experienced for a few years now. And one of the objectives of having reserves were probably twofold. One, to avoid high interest charges in the event that you experience an emergency and have to borrow the funds to deal with that. And second is that once you've got the funds in a pot that is going to be your reserve pot, that historically in years past the district would be able to earn interest income on that. And so those things have been inverted in our recent experience. The district doesn't receive a lot of interest income on funds that are held in reserve, and conversely, when borrowing money to meet emergencies and things like that, we're seeing lower interest rates potentially than we have historically. So it's kind of a different world out there, and so perhaps as long as we see this relatively low interest environment, we may want to look at a target, something along the recommendation of the district administrator, between $5 and maybe $750,000, something like that, rather than $1.5 million, as a target goal.
Okay. So, perhaps we should. I'll see if there's consensus. Let's say that we establish annually 10% of the annual cost of district maintenance and operation. I think you said that number's around 400,000 or so.
340,000, yeah.
Okay, so that's something for us to think about. I agree that this reserve should be used only in cases of emergency, natural disaster, unexpected event, or probably even one time. And then we want to talk about one time, that, which is typically what we see with reserve accounts in respective jurisdictions. So I think that's something we want to look at. With respect to a unanimous vote, I'm just feeling like a majority vote is something that we should continue with. And I think we've had some instances where we've had only one member or two members who were here, or an alternate couldn't make it. So what we wouldn't want to do is tie our hands if there was a true emergency. So maybe we leave it out as a majority vote to utilize the reserves, because we'll have the criteria in place and the public will be able to give input and we'll be able to explain why we're dipping into reserve funds. And then, Jim, I think I like your idea of maybe it's not $1.5 million, but maybe it's $800,000 or whatever, and that's really a goal. So that's not something that we would just do once, do every year, or we maybe just do that over time.
And then if the financial market outlook changes and interest rates change, things like that happen, we can review the policy on, you know, an as-necessary basis if it becomes prudent to reserve more funds.
All right. So I think at this point, we'll see if someone wants to try and form a motion. I know there's a lot. But I would think in the motion we'd want to adopt this resolution where we establish our reserve fund in the amount of 10% of annual cost of district maintenance and operation, that we would make sure that there's an annual amount to be determined by the board and to be made to the reserve fund by July 31st, that the reserve be used only in cases of emergency, natural disaster, or unexpected event. And then I would also add that it be a one-time expense. And then that this be done by majority vote of the board, and our target goal for now is $800,000, and then we'll revisit this depending on interest rates and other market factors that may come to bear at that time.
That sounded like a motion.
Oh. I don't normally make motions as a chair, but I'll make that a motion.
Okay.
Is there a second?
I would second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, how about a roll call?
Dr. Lindsay?
Yes.
Karen Schultz?
Yes.
Dr. Hill?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Very good. I think that's – thank you for bringing that back. I think that is will help us with our fiscal planning as we move forward.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to translate this motion into the resolution.
Okay.
So I want to make sure that I understand. The amount to be 10% of the annual maintenance, the timing to be the same, July 31st of the year.
That's correct.
To add to the purposes that it be a one-time use.
It's a one-time expense. We would not want to use reserves to pay salaries and things of that are on an ongoing nature.
Okay. For the specified purpose at the time. Okay. Okay, by majority vote.
Mm-hmm.
And are you thinking that the resolution would sunset? Is that the intent of the board after a certain amount of time, or would be brought back on an annual basis for review?
Hopefully we're in agreement that it would be brought back for an annual review.
Annual review with the budget, perhaps.
Yeah.
Same. Thank you.
Okay. How's everybody?
Thing we're going to run a risk of is defining emergency. So I think that we should pick a definition of emergency.
Okay. Maybe or should we say what it's not? And
well,
what it's not for is salaries and benefits, and it's not to be used for that. I think that might be.
And if you have a split board, then there's something not right. Because who would vote against
an emergency.
Mr. Chair, with the board's permission, I'll do my best with the resolution.
Okay.
And if it's not reflective of the board's intent, we'll try again.
Very good.
Thank you.
Everyone okay with that?
I'm good. And I think, Mr. Chair, your observation that a full board may not be present in the case of an emergency is well advised.
Thank
so
you.
I appreciate your thought on that.
Okay, I think we're clear. Staff, you're clear with that direction, and Ms. Duncan will look for that resolution. All right, let's move on to item 6C. This is a state revolving fund planning loan application. It's the State Water Resources Control Board. Mr. Huebner.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, directors, members of the public. This is item 6C. Again, some background. Your district's 2016 rate study for identified the state revolving fund loan or the funding vehicle as a preferred funding source for the district's wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. The loan program by the State Water Resource Control Board allows terms up to 30 years for payment of these loans. The interest is established at 50% of the state's latest general obligation bond rate, so very low. Historically, that has been in the 1 to 3% range. So for today, we've, for your consideration, prepared an application. That's attachment 1 and 2 for the district for a state revolving fund planning loan. I want to make this very clear. This is not construction. That would be considered at a later time. This is for planning, design, and permitting. Or again, the redundancy project. This loan does allow the applicant, in this case the district, to recover various planning related costs, project management, permitting, project design, and district anticipates, if the board approves today, submitting this completed application to the state board by June 22nd, or essentially next week. These are the costs that have been identified to you before in terms of planning, design, and permitting, engineering design services, permitting, project manager administration, for a total cost of $1,053,000. So the attached resolutions authorize the district chair to sign the loan agreement and take other actions required by the agreement, commitment by the district to repay the state revolving fund loan. So this is a change that occurred actually about 10 years ago, a default in a local community here in San Luis Obispo, the first in the nation. State Board then changed its policy to require a pledge that revenues be secured and that this loan be repaid. If the application is approved by the State Board, the district would be obligated upon execution repaying for this loan for the term of such financing until a modification or change is approved in writing by the State Board. Repayment of the State Revolving Fund loan begins 1 year after the project completion. As I mentioned before, it's our intent to prepare a construction loan sometime after the initial investigation coordination with the Coastal Commission is complete. If that loan application is submitted for the construction, repayment of both of them, as I said, would not begin until 1 year after the construction of the redundancy project is complete. I want to make two corrections. So we've put and provided you with a revised application. So it now reflects what the resolution says in terms of Chairman Schultz being the authorized representative. We've made a few changes. So essentially, it's just the application has been slightly modified. I noted also that there was reference to our litigation and the cost amount, so I've corrected that. And so that copy is provided for you today. And then secondly, with the resolution that's being considered in the recommendation, there is one correction that I want to point out, and this is in Resolution 350. And if you look under now, therefore, be resolved, there's mention of construction, so that should be stricken. Again, this is for the planning and design of the redundancy project and does not involve construction. So we didn't catch that typo, and we would request that you make that in any approval that you make. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Are there any questions of staff? No.
No questions.
Okay. Very good. Is there any member of the community that would like to address the item that's before the board?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. In about April, there was a $10,000 contract in front of you for Bartle Wells to handhold a $19 million loan application for the whole project, including design. So I'd like to know why the change of course. This does make more sense. But some of my criticisms of that application remain and are inherent into this application. I think fundamentally, you don't have a permit. You don't know that you could build anything at that site. And to pursue wasting state revolving fund people's time, let alone your own, pursuing a loan for a project you may never get to build and certainly may never get to, shouldn't proceed on design. You don't have a permit, which is permission to build there. I think it should wait. Just so you know, Mary, this is the redundancy project, and it is not the recycling project that you want. Also, just because
Julie,
you referenced recycling earlier. The other thing I wanted to point out for you, Ms. Lucy, is that at attachment 6 in the big fat part of the packet is one of the audits that has been done on this district. The inherent flaws in this application are that it points to the CDP application. It points to that, well, the preliminary application that was before your board a couple of months ago that you did stop had different numbers than the coastal development permit application. This application has also different numbers from those numbers. And then within this packet is the rate study, which has even other numbers. Nothing is consistent. And I can tell you, if I were a loan officer, and I'm not, but I'm a detailed person, and if I can catch those details, so will they. And that wastes everyone's time. And time is money. I think it's premature to go after this loan at this time. You haven't hired Mr. Handlers, and his name is on this application. You have Mr. Nunley, I guess. I don't know that he is going to be forever the project contract administrator or whatever position he has. His name's on this application. It should just be Gerhardt and you, John.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back to the board. Gerhardt, is there any information that you want to... Ms. Tacker has raised some items for maybe some clarification or some explanation, anything?
So in any application, of course, there's ability to revise if there's errors or there's additional new information that comes, and that's the dialogue that you have with the state revolving fund, the state board contact person, and we have that contact person, and that will be something that I'll be involved in on a regular basis. So none of this is set in stone that it can't be changed at any future time that additional information comes forth. So there's one thing.
Okay.
This application gets you in the queue. It'll take anywhere from 4 to 6 months to get approval. So at this point, there's very little risk of applying like anything and finding out, getting in their queue. These funds are competitive, so I've looked at the State Board website and some of their guidance and some of their projects, and Now, there's a number of communities that are competing for this, and so we want to be in their queue and compete for this loan money, for this planning money, and, of course, later on for the construction money. So very little risk to doing this other than some of the time and effort in putting the application together.
Okay. And, Garrett, has there been any additional communications with coastal staff? I know we talked about this, talked about that a little bit in previous sessions.
So we're still working through some of the analysis, some of the work to provide the response to the Coastal Commission. In my district administrator report, I have some detail in terms of where those studies and that work is, but we anticipate, 30 days to finish some of that, and then we'll be re-engaging them with a reply.
Okay, very good. Any comments from board members? Jim, you have anything?
With regard to the comment that was made, I share the concern that numbers throughout our documents should be somewhat consistent. They may change a little bit with different dates of the production of the documents as more information is received at more recent time. But I think in general, consistency is a goal we should be trying to achieve. This does pretty much kick off our redundancy project, and it's the chicken and egg question. Do you have the permit? No, we don't. But if we had the permit, would we have the money? No, we wouldn't. So I think it's necessary that we proceed with a two-pronged approach, which is applying, obviously, for the permit, which we need before we go any further. But I think that starting to look at funding for the early stages of the project is a wise move to do, so that we don't end up with a permit and then another 6 month or more delay chasing funding for it. Redundancy is, in my scheme of things, industrial safety, reliable operation. Redundancy is our third objective, and that also feeds into the ability to have a feedstock, if you will, in the future if we were to pursue tertiary and full advanced treatment, that we need to have a reliable second stage treatment before we can engage in discussion of recycling. So redundancy also is fundamental to us avoiding fines in the future as our wastewater discharge permit becomes more challenging to meet. And again, for the ability to potentially engage in advanced treatment. So I do support this. We do have safeguards in place such that we're not going to go off doing a lot of engineering work in advance of getting our permit. And if we were to be awarded this loan, obviously we would need a permit to go forward, and we don't want to do engineering on something that can't be permitted. I have a relatively high degree of confidence that our project can be permitted, and I think it's in the district's financial and operational advantage that it go forward. So I am in support of the proposal.
Very good. Mary, do you have anything to add? Anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Ms. Tackard's attempts at taking a swipe at me. The definition of audit is very broad. You have your fiscal audits, you have your forensic audits, you have your annual audits. For you to define the definition of audit strictly down to an annual, which obviously I'm very aware that this district has annual audits every year, but I wasn't speaking of that. What I was speaking of is auditing accounts. This district has no idea which sewers are cooked up to what's going down what pipes, who's flushing what. That's the type of audit I was speaking of. Mm-hmm. Of course, I know there are annual audits.
With due respect, I don't see that that's on topic.
Okay, come on, come
here. It is on topic, sir.
Can you, any comments on this long application?
Yes. It was public comment, and I was responding and clarifying. So I actually agree with what Mr. Hill said, you know, to this is a planning application. We're in a planning point. I'm fully supportive of the application going forward. It does take a while, 5 to 6 months, so it's not costing us anything to submit the application, so I'm very much in favor of it.
Okay, and this grant is, I think it would be what we're applying for, $1.8 million, and in the long queue time, I think it is prudent for us to at least proceed in this manner, and with all things we're doing with respect to working toward the redundancy project, meeting with coastal staff. I know that we've talked about going up and having conversations with them very soon. So I think this does make sense for us to move forward with this. And so with that, someone want to make a motion on this item?
I move that
with the following change to the text that was presented in numeral one paragraph, elimination of the words "and construction," I would move approval of Resolution 2016-350, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District authorizing the district chairman to apply for a state revolving fund planning loan for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project from the State Water Resources Control Board.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Let's move on to item 60. This is appointment.
Mayor Schultz,
yes.
There was a companion resolution, 351.
Okay. We need to have a motion on resolution 2016-351. Mary, would you like to make that motion?
Yeah, please, because I don't have that one.
Attachment 4 in the packet.
Yeah. Oh. It's 351 or 350.
So I think we just took action on 350, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I move that the resolution of the Board of Directors for the South County Sanitation District pledges of revenues and funds for the state revolving fund planning loan for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. We just did that one.
We just did 350, and so 351 is the...
So her motion covers 351.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Is there a second?
I will second approval of resolution 2016-351.
Very good. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Great, and thank you, Gerhard, for keeping us on heading in the right direction. So with that, let's move to item 60, which is appointment of the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 1 and 1A Advisory Committee. Gerhard, you have the floor.
Yes. So straightforward item. You have a staff report before you. You know, there's a background. Traditionally, the district staff has participated in this Zone 1, 1A Advisory Committee. And previously, in 2014, the board appointed Shannon Sweeney as a district representative. As you know, Ms. Sweeney no longer is employed or is contracted to the district. Therefore, the county has asked that the board, if it wishes, go through this appointment process, and that submitted that. So we've put together that recommendation. That would be myself as the primary representative and John Clemens as the alternate, and that is our recommendation for you today.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any questions of staff?
I just have one. Why would we, would it be more, I guess, better placement to have the plant supervisor there versus the administrator? Just being familiar with the Zone 11A, I just think that, you know.
I'm certainly not opposed to that if you want to flop the representation or the participation. That was just our thought initially as my district administrative role, that would be some I've been picking up past committee representations from Mr. Clemens and to free him to work on the plant and get back to those duties. So that was just the thought.
Yeah, I just think he has a lot to offer to the zone, but it's definitely your call.
Jim, anything?
I have no questions.
Okay, so let me see if there's someone in the community that has any comments on this item. Okay, seeing no one come forward and bring it back to the board. Jim, go ahead.
I support the resolution as presented. I do agree that Mr. Clemens has very valuable point of view for Zone 11A and other things, but I believe he shares that with Mr. Huebner and that those that voice will certainly be heard, and we strongly respect that. And having Mr. Clemens as the alternate, I think, is perfectly appropriate. So I'm in support of the motion.
So, Wendy, do we need a motion on this item, or if there's a consensus of the board, is that just direction?
Just a motion would be fine.
Okay. So, can we consider that to be a motion, Jim?
Yes, that's a motion to approve staff recommendation and appoint, submit the application to the Board of Supervisors for formal consideration and appointment.
Okay, great. Because the motion is a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Let's move on to our next item, which is modification of resolution number 2014-314, policies and procedures for expenditure of district funds for supplies, equipment, construction, and services. Mr. Huebner, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, directors, Gerhard Huebner. I'll be introducing this item. This is item 6E. Some background, back in September 2013, although the resolution number has a 2014 number, I don't really understand why, but that's for another discussion. Your board considered policies and procedures for expenditures of the district's funds for supplies and construction and services. Go further back in time, back in 2010, your board adopted an earlier version, which revised the then current purchasing policies that went back to 2005. In your 2013 update, you elected the district to become subject to uniform public construction cost accounting, incorporated some higher dollar limits, informal bidding process, and these were seen at the time as a natural progression to strengthen the district's financial controls. So the reason why we're bringing this item to you today, it is an outcome of the Knutson report and a recommendation. And if you look at the board direction in the January 20th, 2016 staff report, you directed us to conduct, as part of the board review of purchasing policy, consider provision for consultant service contracts that exceed a certain specified amount, and the purchasing policy is proposed for review with the annual budget. So we did the budget, just coincidentally, we looked at it, we saw this, and said, let's bring it to your board for consideration. So that's the language straight out of the staff report. So meet that obligation, met with the legal staff, we reviewed it. We're not recommending today an overhaul or a redo of the policy and procedures, but recommending just a few modifications. So let me walk you through a few of those modifications. And we've attached a red line version for you so you can see those changes as attachment one. So the first one is change the district manager name back to district administrator. So you'll see that throughout the document. That's a pretty simple change, affect the current title. Looking at the second change, specifically call out in section 2.5A the district administrator's authority for services up to $25,000. Well, the rationale is some clarity and specificity and perhaps even more transparency because on an overview, it doesn't really specify what for professional services, what that limit is. So this would also allow for more efficiency and effective use of district time and resources obtaining services, again, which was not clear to us in the prior resolution. And this authority is consistent with other agencies and authorities provided to department heads to procure services. So that's the rationale. Moving on, we noted also, and I noticed, and really noticed it really my first week, that there was an inconsistency in section 2.5. So when you look at that, the district administrator as a purchasing agent has up to $7,500 for equipment and supplies, but is later restricted to $5,000 without authorization of the board. So we're just recommending you go to $7,500 to be consistent with what seems like the original intent. And then just eliminate the phrase equipment, supplies, and services, again, that it only this section only applies to purchases. And then lastly, reformatted the document. I found it was real difficult to follow it, and so that's just a little bit of housekeeping. So with that, those are the changes that are reflected in the redline version. That's our recommendation today that you consider and adopt these modifications to Resolution 2014-314.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that report. Any questions of staff? Jim, you have something?
No.
Mary? All right. Is there anyone from the community that would like to address the item before the board? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the board. What's the pleasure of the board?
I do have just an administrative question or comment, I guess, based on Mr. Huebner's observation. Would this not sequentially be Resolution 2016-352?
Yes, I mean, we were looking to since we were taking so few modifications on the original one, we were leaving essentially that in place, but renumbering that. I guess that's your question, Director Hill?
Yeah.
Certainly, it could be, and we could just renumber it as a new resolution number. I'd have to ask legal if that's...
Say legal counsel when he...
Oh. There you go.
Either way is fine, but if it's clear to go along with the board's action in 2016 to give it a 2016 number, we can certainly do that.
That seems to make sense to me rather than inviting confusion if we come up with an obsolete copy of the old resolution.
All right. I think that's a good amendment. So someone want to make a motion on this item?
Renumbering the resolution from what is printed on the document as follows, that it become resolution number 2016-352, I would move that the Board of Directors of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District adopt resolution 2016-352 as renumbered, a resolution amending the adopted policies and procedures for the expenditure of district funds for supplies, equipment, construction, and services as set forth in the resolution 2010-274.
Okay, very good. There's a second. There's a motion and a second.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Simpson has just pointed out that actually we did numbers not quite sequentially within the meeting, so it would be 2016. Sorry, I didn't say that right. 353. Anyway, the last number would be 353. Thank you.
353. Thank you. I will amend my discussion and my motion to number 2016-353.
Second and a second. Is agreeable to that?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Let's move on to the district administrator and plant superintendent's report. Mr. Gearhart, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, directors, members of the audience. You have a written report in front of you. You'll see the updates I provided in italicized, at least with the district administrator report. In the interest of time, I won't go through them. I'm sure folks can take a look at that. If they have any questions, feel free to contact me. Give me a call. I want to point out one thing for clarification in the superintendent's report. So we did have an exceedance of the permit limits for our total suspended solids. There's clarification language in there. They're not in italics. That's why I'm bringing this forth, is that this doesn't trigger a fine under the mandatory minimum penalty law or the Migden bill, so to speak. This is considered what they consider a certain type of pollutant, an exceedance. You have to have four of them. It's a chronic before you get a $3,000 penalty. So I just want to make that clear. So we are monitoring our TSS conditions within the plant. The superintendent obviously is very aware of it. He's working with his operators and any corrective measures. And, again, we'll report back to you if we continue to see any exceedances.
Very good. Any is that the conclusion of your report? I want to make sure I didn't jump the gun.
I'm sorry. That concludes my report.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Mary, you have a question?
Mr. Huebner, can I ask you, I've asked in the past, first of all, when there's a difference in the readings, you'll make sure they're italicized or bolded or something.
Okay.
To make a distinction. And then in the past, I've asked that, you know, as either plant supervisor or administrator, that somebody sign off on these numbers, say these are, you know, correct to my best knowledge and ability or something. You know, a couple initials.
Sir, so
I know you've seen that before.
To a certain degree, we do that. I mean, I'll double-check with our superintendent on how we officially note it, but we've informed the regional board. We did that by email, so they're aware of that. So I'm not sure.
No, it's for me.
Okay.
It's for the community. I've seen it in other sand districts and in other things, is that usually the plant supervisor will say, you know, there's a stamp there, at least a sand district stamp or something, that at least acknowledges these readings.
So certainly our lab results are ELAB certified. I mean, we have an ELAB certified lab, and so those results have to go through that process. And there's a signature, I believe, that go through that process.
Okay. So, right.
So you're asking for a copy of that or a signature on the
A little note on the bottom that says these are certified tests.
Okay.
I mean, if there's no objection, I think that's probably something that can be accommodated.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Jim, you have anything? Okay. Garrett, nice report, and please let Mr. Clemens know that we appreciate the work that he's doing and that we know that they're on top of this.
I will. And they are doing a terrific job trying to keep up with the maintenance issues. We've had some, unexpected failure in some of our equipment, and we're working through that, as well as we're doing some maintenance projects. So it's a very busy time at the plant, just so to speak. There's a lot of construction activity.
And I would say also let the workers know that we appreciate their efforts.
So. I will.
Okay, very good.
I would second the chair's commendation.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that could be unanimous.
Very good. So, legal counsel, would you cover our closed session item tonight, and then I'll see if there's anyone. Oh, I'm sorry. You want to come forward on that?
Thank you, Beatrice Spencer, again. I just wanted to say that one of the most interesting things that I have found after attending these meetings now for nearly 2 years has been the plant superintendent's reports. And to me, this meeting misses something when we just say, oh, there's a written report, you can look it up online, and by the way, tell them good job, guys. I really in a sick kind of way, I guess, enjoyed Mr. Clemens giving us his report, and you could, I really appreciated his respect for his employees, his admiration for his employees, and that is gone with just downloading the report from the website and not hearing Mr. Clemens. I also, as a member of the public and a ratepayer, liked the opportunity to thank Mr. Clemens personally, and now we no longer have that opportunity. And I'm sorry, it's just not the same thanking Mr. Huebner, because now we're talking about putting him in a satellite office somewhere, and we've the public has lost our contact with the man who, and his team, who he always so glowingly refers to as being part of this meeting. And to me, we're missing something when we don't have that. So thank you.
Thank you for that comment.
I just want to say I appreciate the comments. Mr. Clemens is welcome, of course, to come. He's attended quite a few of these meetings and expressed to me perhaps wanting a little bit of time off. I'll certainly transmit your comments to him specifically, and thank you. Okay. But I just want to assure you, he's not here because we didn't direct him to be here. He's not here because he wanted some time off and, again, focus back to the plant superintendent job that he has.
Okay. Ms. Price?
Yeah. Patricia Price, Aurora Grandy. I just wanted to say that I've been gone for a month. I've been missing meetings because I've been on vacation. And when I came in and saw that John wasn't here, I was really disappointed. He really, really is the face of the district as far as I'm concerned. And I really do enjoy his reports, and if it's a sick way, then that's okay. I really do enjoy his reports and how he brings his team into this room. So we feel, to me, he's such a huge part of this district. I really want him back.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else?
Ron Arleson, Grover Beach. I've been coming to this board for close to 20 years, and when Appleton was here, it was very nice. But I think that John brings something that no other superintendent has brought. You can tell that he's got so much heart to the job, and he's super qualified. I mean, that's only evident in his reports, and his reports were nice, and it was nice to have him here.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it to the public, and those are all very good comments. And so I think Gerhard will have that conversation with Don, and when he's available, have him here.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks, everyone.
If we can briefly respond, I appreciate the public comments on the topic, and also have been going back, as Mr. Arnoldson said. We've traditionally had the plant superintendent attend at least a portion of the board meeting, and we might reorganize the meeting such that the plant superintendent's report could be given toward the beginning of the meeting instead of the end, such that Mr. Clemens could attend that portion of the meeting and then not have to stay for the rest of the meeting unless there was some particular item that he needed to present.
Let's allow Mr. Huebner to talk with Mr. Clemens and figure something out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely.
Very good. Legal counsel, would you cover our closed session item tonight, and then I'll see if the public has any comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board will retire to a closed session for a conference with legal counsel concerning existing litigation under paragraph 1 of subdivision D of Government Code section 54956.9. One case, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus State Water Resources Control Board, Superior Court of California, with the case number indicated.
Very good. Is there any member of the community that would like to address the item for closed session? Okay. Seeing no one come forward, let me close it, and then we are going to recess into closed session. Yeah, you want to take a few minutes? Yeah, let's do that.